Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Welcome to the Thanksgiving edition of the Midweek Reality Check. America is now overflowing with optimism about the likelihood of lower taxes and reduced regulations and the end of the woke agenda that is replete with anti-American ideas. This country is supposed to be a meritocracy, after all, where we reward excellence and care nothing about race, gender, color, or creed. That has been flipped upside down by the DEI craze, which is thankfully, hopefully, dead and buried, at least for a while. Offsetting this newly found optimism about markets and the economy is the fact that the Fed will be lowering interest rates at a much more moderate pace than what was expected just this past summer. In addition, tariffs, which are taxes, and deportations are a depressant to growth. When you put this all together, the overwhelming impetus is for higher stocks in the short term. This should be the case until long-term interest rates and the credit markets begin to revolt. And you could actually see that beginning of some serious fissures could already be happening in the long-term interest rate complex known as the Treasury market. But that has yet to become anything but normal and quiescent to this point. Having said that, please do not think that all is wonderful with the economy right now. My current bullish stance comes from the optimism associated with the anticipated changes to fiscal and monetary conditions that lie just ahead. But listen to what the leading economic index continues to warn about. The Conference Board's leading economic index for the U.S. declined by 0.4% in October to 99.5, following a 0.3% decline in September. Over the six-month period between April and October, the LEI fell by 2.2%, slightly more than its 2% decline over the previous six-month period from October 2023 to April of 2024. The largest negative contributor to the LEI's decline came from manufacturing new orders, which remained weak in 11 out of 14 industries. In October, manufacturing hours worked fell by the most since December of 2023, while unemployment insurance claims rose and building permits declined, partly reflecting the impact of hurricanes in the Southeast. Additionally, the negative yield spread continued to weigh on the LEI. That is the 10-year note minus Fed funds rate. It's negative. Apart from possible temporary impact of hurricanes, the U.S. LEI continued to suggest challenges to economic activity ahead, according to the Conference Board. In spite of the LEI, take a look at one beneficial and tangible result of the election that surfaced this week. The real estate market. Yes, the real estate market has an island or oasis of optimism or hope. The prospect of a smooth transition of power in D.C. has unleashed a wave of mortgage applications. Applications to purchase a new home increased by 12% from the previous week and were a staggering 52% higher than the same week 1 year ago. That's really good news. I do not think this is at all sustainable, but for now, it's good news. After all, home prices and the cost of home ownership is just plainly out of reach for most consumers. That hasn't changed. However, this is one example of the type of optimism that has manifested in the past few weeks. We also have financial conditions that are easy and continue to get even easier, just as we have the tightest credit spread seen since 2007. Given these current conditions, it is imperative to, for the immediate future, suppress your visceral impulse to be negative about the massive bubbles that remain extant. But before you mistake me as some permabull, understand that I remain, as ever, fully aware that the stock market, the real estate market, and the credit markets are currently in record bubble territory. For example, just give me a second to expound on how dangerous the situation remains. I mean, the hope is for Trump to come in, sweep the Congress, make some changes for fiscal and monetary policy changes, and extend this economy and this market bull for a little while longer. But to actually materially change these bubbles, it's going to take massive growth in GDP, a massive spurt in GDP. I just don't see that happening. So, for example, total non-financial debt has soared to $33.7 trillion just prior to the global financial crisis in 2007, to $75.3 trillion today. In fact, this debt as a percentage of GDP is much greater today than it was even at the start of the GFC. Today, the total amount of non-financial debt is 260% of GDP versus 234%. And for those to think that Trump 2.0 is going to be another Ronald Reagan revolution with stocks and GDP soaring, think again. The total market cap of equities as a percentage of GDP is currently an eye-popping 207%. Now, if you want to ask, well, what was the condition back in, you know, Ronald Reagan days? This ratio was 40% in 1981, not 207, 40. And the Reagan regime witnessed a huge increase in the labor force as women continued to flood the workforce at the same time the economy was healing from record stagflation, where interest rates were plunging across the board, across the yield curve. This is not a repeatable process in 2025. Women are already fully in the labor force, and deportations are not conducive to gains in the workforce. And long-term rates are rising no matter what the Fed does. Also, the national debt was 31% of GDP in 1981. Today, it's 120%. In other words, there was a lot more room for government to stimulate the economy without causing inflation. We don't have that room today. So when you put this all together, you understand that the runway for the economy to take off is short, very short. Whereas we should be able to delay the grand reconciliation of asset prices for a bit longer under the Trump regime of lower taxes and reduced regulations, hallelujah, the collapse of these bubbles remains inevitable still. I have my finger on the sell trigger as I await the highly stochastic components of my inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model to warn us when to sprint for the emergency exit. Now, I want to just add a word or two on gold. Gold got crushed by nearly $100 per ounce intraday, or over 3% crash on Monday of this week, a couple days ago. Silver shed over 3% as well. Now, after selling all our gold and silver, you know, right after the election, we bought an inflation hedge back last week that contains land, it contains energy, and it contains precious metal royalty companies. But we're not fully on board at the moment with owning a very high percentage to gold. We've temporarily become less bullish on the precious metal because the Fed will soon stop cutting short-term interest rates due to sticky inflation. I mean, they were full board going into massive, you know, emergency 50 basis point rate cuts trying to get Biden reelected. But now that, you know, the election's over, you know, maybe we'll go a little more slowly. They have maybe one in December and then I think two throughout 2025. So they're almost done lowering short-term rates. But long-term rates are rising regardless. And real interest rates are rising. That is not good for gold. There also is going to be no chaos associated with the transition of power in D.C. And gold does thrive on chaos. The recession, most importantly, the recession was put on abeyance by the promise of the Trump tax cut deregulation regime. Now, it also doesn't help that the U.S. dollar is rising because of impending tariffs. So you got a rising dollar, no chaos, recession, rising nominal rates, rising real-term interest rates. And to top it all off, it doesn't really help either that cryptocurrencies are currently stealing money inflows from precious metals because Donald Trump is inexplicably in love with Bitcoin instead of gold. We would all be better off as a nation if Trump sought to back the US dollar with gold instead of making the US the global headquarters of cryptocurrencies, which are really meaningless. 64 figures, electronic letters and numbers that have an unlimited number of ecosystems that they can ride along this blockchain. You know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, they all perform the same basic function. So they're not rare, and they have the backing of Wall Street. The only thing that makes these currencies have any value at all is that they're decentralized. The government can't touch them. Government doesn't know who you are, and they can't touch these currencies. But guess what? If the government can take away your currency because they know who you are, because you have to know who you are when you buy an ETF, then they're not decentralized. It's the centralization of Bitcoin that's driving the price to $100,000 a unit. And that means that the government can take that away. And that means that the currencies can collapse. So I'm writing out this Bitcoin revolution. And I know that I feel some sense of safety because the intrinsic value is virtually, you know, maybe I say $1,000 for a Bitcoin, maybe, not $100,000 a unit. Gold, back to gold. Gold thrives when the competition for money funds, you know, money market accounts, when the money in the bank, when the interest rate on your money funds, the money markets, are going down and equities are reducing in value, that's when gold thrives the most. That's a recession. The yield on money funds goes down and investors flock to gold, which bears no interest. Also, equity prices usually collapse during times when GDP contracts. Hence, investors flock to the protection found in gold. The odds of a recession, as I mentioned, have been greatly reduced in the short term, and along with that, the money flows into precious metals have been attenuated. Gold also thrives during stagflationary times because real interest rates are falling and most stocks falter as well. Well, we're not in runaway stagflation right now, and we're not in a recession. So gold does not tend to do well in those times, and that's why we took down our position, because I'm not a stop clock, I'm not a perma bull, I'm not a perma bear on anything. I'm only permanently bullish on making you as much money as I can as safely as I can. That's what I'm permanently bullish on doing. And you can count on that. Bonds and equities are both worse alternatives for investors when compared to gold during stagflations. That's coming. And my audience is aware that stagflation is where the economy is heading in the longer term. The buy and hold 60-40 portfolio is a pathway to penury. It was not always this way, but with both credit and equities in a bubble, it is the truth today. And I wish God's peace be with you all this Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.